Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction by James J. Myworm is a novel about the daunting challenges waiting at home and abroad for the next U.S. administration, the search for innovative responses, and people asked to implement the solutions. The story opens on Inauguration Day in 2021 through the eyes of the protagonist, Salt Pepper, whose career included stints with the U.S. government and a Washington law firm. It portrays the deep disagreements and partisanship that divide our citizens from one another and their government, and the U.S. from the rest of the world. The crises and dysfunction are non-imaginary, neither is the need for a leader willing to face the situation with courage and contribute to much-needed solutions, even when risky and inconvenient. James, Chairman Emeritus of one of the world's largest global law firms and recognized by Law 360 as one of the 10 most innovative law firm managing partners, draws on his extensive international experience to craft a narrative that feels ripped from today's headlines. James is a sought-after speaker known for his insightful commentary and strategic thinking, sharing his deep expertise across the United States and internationally. We welcome back to This Week in America, James J. Myworm, author of the timely and gripping and best-selling award-winning Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction, our guest on This Week in America. James, welcome back to the program. It is a pleasure to have you here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you and your audience, Rick, and we look forward to having a good discussion. There's certainly plenty of things to talk about.
Well, yeah, if you've got 4 hours, we should be able to cover it rather adequately. There is so much here, and you pick up the paper, you turn on the news, and you have more topics that you can really get into. But we're going to stick with what's in the book. The book is Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. Congratulations, first of all. You're featured in Bookseller Magazine. You've won a number of awards for the book, New York Times Best Book of 2024, the Eric Hoffer Prestigious Award, the 2024 winner, Pacific Book Awards. Congratulations on all of the accolades. And what's this like personally, being a debut novelist and to have all this attention and recognition?
Well, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful is the biggest and loudest word I can talk about. When we did this book, the goal was to have some fun, do some good, and to convince people that we had a message and a methodology that we wanted people to consider and adopt, because the book is about joining people together rather than pulling them apart. And I think that's what's needed in this world of ours that is so troubled and so difficult to navigate in.
You know, that's interesting. That is a theme as you read through the book, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. Getting together and working together, there's so much, and you've talked about this before, I think consensus building, two of the big words that you talk about. Give me a little bit of background on consensus building, because everybody seems to want to win the particular fight they're involved in, and they don't want to give any ground.
They don't, and that's surely what we see on a day-to-day basis. But I think, you know, one of my messages is coming arising out of the book and the players that are in the book is what we want people to think about is what's for the greater good over the long period of time. And what I would like to see is for us to jump a rapid fire into the middle, and so that we can work together toward common shared goals. I'm a big believer in the fact that, you know, we share more than we disagree about things. And I think if you can sort through the mushy middle that gets distracted by the unhappiness of our current politics, that would take us a good way toward solving the problem. But you have to get by that initial barrier of thinking about not only how things are affecting you, but how they're affecting other people. And so I want to be able to communicate, and that's what the purpose of the book is in part, communicate vignettes of little people, big people, long people, strong people in this world that's so complicated. And we talk about the school teacher, the college president, the fireman, the farmer, the executive, the retailer, the people in Congress, the people who are trying to interface with people all over the world. It's a complicated world, and it's complicated not because people want to be complicated necessarily, but because it's a necessity, and then they defend themselves. And once you get into a defensive posture, You see what we have going on in Texas, for example, in terms of the voting.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And again, this story that James wrote, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction, could be ripped from the headlines, who deals with so many of those issues, and he deals with them through the main character, Salt Pepper. He's a unique character. Give us a background on him, and how much of him is maybe a reflection of who you were.
There's some similarities, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere in central Ohio. I married my high school sweetheart. We've been married for 30 plus years, and we lived in the Washington, D.C. area for 30 plus years as well. And so we have a lot in common, and we grew up together. But we also shared principles and things that are important to us on a day-to-day basis. And that's part of what I think it makes a marriage work, is if you can work together and share values, share goals, it makes life a lot easier.
And that's the way in real life as well, isn't it? When you're working with government, when you're working with people of any kind, if you're willing to go through the processes you just talked about, it makes everything so much better. Our guest on the program is James Maiworm. If you're Googling that, that's Maiworm. His website is very simple. It's mywormpubs.com. That link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, will take you directly there. The book opens Inauguration Day 2021, one of the most political charged days in recent American history for a number of reasons. Why was this the right moment for you to start the book?
Well, the timing was really the result of an amalgamation of considerations. I was facing mandatory retirement from my law firm. I was facing mandatory retirement just by virtue of age, from a bank board that I was on. We were in the middle of the COVID crisis. And so there was a lot of things to be down about and worried about, what are you gonna do for act two in life? And so I was interested in that. And I thought, well, what can I do about things that I'm disappointed in? I distinctly remember the day in the Georgia election where President Trump was sitting at a desk somewhere in Georgia talking to people about how he could get just all he needed was 11,000 votes or something
yes.
like that. 11,000 votes. And so, if you can't bring together 11,000 votes, there's something wrong. And that was his point. But the hard fact of the matter is 11,000 votes made a big difference, a big difference. And so if you can make a big difference with relatively little margin involved in whatever you're trying to measure or achieve, that's something that I decided maybe I could try writing a book about. So the book from the outset was designed to have a message and a mission. And the message was, get off your butts and start focusing on what's real in the world as opposed to what's crazy and not achievable. And also make sure that you pick people who you can work with and convince to work with you. And I think this is about what my mother used to call togetherness. The world needs a little more togetherness than strife.
Let's talk about it. You brought up several interesting points there, but when you talk about people to work with you, do you get people to work with you that will challenge you, that will give you a different idea, maybe that you don't want to hear, or will tell you that's not a good idea, or do you get somebody that will go along because they're working for you and basically reinforce what you're saying, whether it's right or wrong?
I think it's the latter. I think you get a lot of reinforcement or disreinforcement, if that's a word.
Yes.
Because you have to have lots of stick-to-itness in this world that we live in. It's not easy to drive a world full of people. But, I find, Rick, that the world goes around in lots of different ways. But in the final analysis, we share a lot more than we disagree on. And I use various professions as an example. For example, I find it often instructive to talk to cab drivers. Cab driver is an average human being very smart and very ability. You can pick up what's going on in the world because he or she has a lot of exposure to the world.
Yes.
And to me, a cab driver in London is different than a cab driver in New York City is different than a cab driver in Hong Kong, and they change over time. And you can sort of take the temperature of a region or a particular paradigm that's being pushed if you just listen. And I think if we all listened more and said less, we would all be better off. And we need to drive, though, toward the middle of the road as opposed to trying to win everything that's out there to be won.
Yeah, listening seems to be a lost art. We all want to talk, and we all want to talk louder than the person who just finished talking, or you talk over him in a loud fashion, seems to be the way that we do things now. The book is Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction by James Maiwurm, book available wherever books are sold. You said something else I want to touch on for a second. You have someone, in your case, a prominent international figure. You've been involved with all of these issues all of these years. You've still got a lot to give. But there's a mandatory retirement age. How do you handle that? Because obviously you wanted to find something that you would be able to keep functioning, to keep mentally alert, to be able to take your expertise and work on issues. You didn't rush out and buy a fishing boat. You decided to write a book and tackle some of these problems. How difficult is that to face when there's that mandatory retirement age? And should we have a mandatory retirement age?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, I have a view on that.
Oh, yes.
You expect. I think, when I was on a board and we reached a mandatory retirement age, I thought that was okay. I didn't like the result necessarily, but I thought I had added to the mix in ways that were sufficient, given my background and experience. And so maybe the downside of having somebody else coming in was also an upside in the sense that you were adding to the mass of knowledge and experience and judgment. And I think judgment is a big part of this, of the what the world needs more of. It's not only love, sweet love, it's judgment, judgment, judgment. And you want to have people who understand the word empathy. And you want to have people who worry about others as opposed to just one's own backyard. So I think there's a lot to be said for bringing people around and not sticking around forever. So although I didn't like it as a result, I supported it because I thought it was the right thing to do.
Our guest is James Maiwurm. His book is Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. This is an updated version. The book has won numerous awards, including New York Times Best Book 2024. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You take Sam goes from rural Virginia to international power capitals, Berlin and London. What type of research did you do diplomatically, geopolitical elements that enter into the book? Was there a lot of research there, or was a lot of that known to you because of your international acclaim?
Well, a fair amount of it was due to my own observations, we'll call it. I think of myself as an observer of the world rather than a quiet person in the corner. And I also, as you noted earlier, I think you can learn more by listening than talking.
Yes.
If you're the only voice you hear in a room is yours, that's a problem. So I think I didn't find it that difficult. We say right in the beginning of the book, it is not a scholarly journal. It's not intended to be scholarly. It's intended to be able to be picked up by somebody who is your door, the guy who lives next door, the woman who lives with her family next door, somebody who is trying to emigrate from South America. The average individual out there from lots of different things with lots of different places in his or her background and lots of things that they want to achieve. And I think if you can help those people grasp the nettle and move things along in ways that really present themselves in the best way, that's a winner. And so I haven't I you know I did I do some research? Sure. Did I do tons and tons of research? No, because I didn't want it to be a 500-page book with 1,000 footnotes. And I admire people who write those books, but what I wanted to do was get something out there and that would convey the message without being drowned by the messenger. in the form of a scholarly work. So maybe I was lazy, maybe I was lucky, but it worked. And you'd be surprised, Rick, how many people have written to me about that book and say, yeah, it has meant something to them. So I think the message is getting through to people who are have the receiver turned on, and the mission is also becoming better acknowledged and understood.
And you have an element of humor in it as well. Obviously felt, okay, I'm going to lighten up a little bit here. So it's not a scholarly read, is it? It's a book you can sit down and read, learn from, be alarmed at some of the stories there, and smile as well. So humor was an important part of it, wasn't it?
It was indeed, and I think that's important too. I mean, what I wanted to do was generate something that was what I call sort of an easy read, because I didn't want it to be a hurdle that you had to jump over to enjoy the book. I wanted the book to contribute itself to getting over the hurdle, and that to me required a little bit of humor, although nobody's going to think that I'm a Stephen Colbert, for example.
And he's retiring as well.
Yeah, he's retiring. He's faced another form of mandatory retirement.
James Maiworm is our guest on the program. That's Maiworm. The book is called Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. How long did it take you to write this book? You mentioned some of this came about during the COVID time. How long did it take for you to come up with the idea and to have the final draft ready and turn it into the publisher?
Well, it took a long time, and I think mine was a little bit too long. But the story behind that is that when I started the book, as I said earlier, we were on the edge of retirement, on the edge of COVID-13. There were lots of things that I was on the edge of, and I started the book and got quite a ways into it, and I decided I wasn't happy with it. It didn't convey everything that I wanted to convey in ways that I thought were appropriate. And so I took the book materials, put them in a cardboard box, and threw them in the closet. And that closet period of time, the trends in my personal life were continuing to continue. But I decided after about a year and a quarter in the closet, it was time to come out. And so we pulled the book out. We started to rewrite it from scratch. And it was actually a much better read and much better write after having had a year in the basket than it would have been otherwise. So perspective, I guess, non-box perspective. There's a lot of, in this life, in this gentleman's life, boxes played an important role. And it started with getting rid of and moving boxes. But also involved trying to figure out which boxes people went into, good boxes, bad boxes, needs help, whatever. And so it was really an accumulation of experience and thinking. And the book made me think about some things. Doing the book made me think about some things I hadn't thought about as much as I should have.
It's interesting, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction by James Maiworm, our guest on the program. I was going to ask you if you had the sort of list of areas you wanted to talk about before you started writing the book, or did some of them come to you organically as you're writing it? I think you just answered that. There were things that you probably had no idea you were going to talk about in the book until you got to that part of the book when you were writing it.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely correct. I didn't start out with a detailed outline.
Yes.
I'm probably the worst person you could ask about writing a book, because I didn't come at it with a 14-page outline. I came at it with 14 pages of written notes that you couldn't read, and we just sort of soldiered through. But you sort of got the feel for where you wanted to take it, and it was sort of a pay as you go. In a sense. And so I can't say that I'm a model for anything in terms of the way you do this, but I do think you have to have it. How should I call it? It's a passion. If you don't have passion, that's the passion. And if you don't have
Yes.
it about a particular activity, you're not going to do so well with it.
Well, it's obvious in our conversations you have that passion, obvious in the book that you have that passion, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. What do you hope the takeaway is for the reader? And I'm going to focus maybe for a second here on the younger generation. There are probably some people out there that's not really seen the great diplomats and politicians and statesmen over the years that those of us a little bit older have seen. What message particularly for young people? Because they've grown up in an era where people fight with each other on television and in real life, and they don't give ground. What's the message for them, do you think?
I think the message is you've got to, it goes back to having things like empathy, understanding what is the core, the pathway, I guess, that the other person that you're talking to is following. You have to understand where people are coming from before you understand where they're going. And that gets true in politics, or really, I think, in any other vocation. I had a partner who was a very wise person who used to say, he followed the tracks in the snow. He could tell people where they were going just based on the tracks they left in the snow. And the tracks you leave in the snow has to do with your personal growth, what you've experienced, what you've learned from others, and your reaction to the politics of the day. And so I think you can learn a lot if you observe and study tracks in the snow. And that's basically what I did. I've had the fortune to work with or work on behalf of some very interesting people over the years. And some people who I had tremendous respect for. And so if you can find people who have entered a line of profession or other experience that can bring that much to the table and share in an empathetic way thoughts and guidance and the truth about what is reality, and understanding in the current day, which is a tall order, what's real and what's not real, then you've really made some progress. And what I'm looking for is, not perfection. Perfect is the enemy of good.
Yes.
But you have to do the best you can, and you have some feel for it. And if you have enough passion, enough knowledge to get by, and enough research ability to fill the cracks, you can get along if you really got a message that you want to send.
How difficult is it to admit I'm wrong? This was my thinking. You've convinced me otherwise. And to go back and to revise that, maybe not saying I was wrong, but to keep an open mind. It seems like we have an opinion, we have a hot take, and we're dug in with that no matter what we hear. What was it like in your career when you had to be flexible? You got new information, you had a new train of thought.
Well, I grew up in the law practice, and in the practice of law, you're bound by the ethics and rules and otherwise to adopt the position of your client. You have to represent your client and so that sort of from a professional standpoint, I sort of grew up thinking about the other side, whether I was defending against a position or trying to rattle something out from the other side. So that sort of became natural from the standpoint of the book. I was used to taking somebody else's case, as it were, and trying to figure out what we were going to do to make that be a winnable case. Right, wrong, or indifferent, your job was to defend or take your client into consideration. So I think that's a big part of it, was just that background combined with the fact that I'm sort of a very serious observer of political science. So there's a lot of things that come into that.
I mentioned the international background that you've had. You've had a wealth of domestic and international transactional experiences. Let's talk about that for a second. Where the U.S. now stands in terms of prestige in the world and this transactional experience, where we hear so much about that during the art of the deal and all of this, everything is a transaction. First of all, how about the standing of the U.S. now in the world? Where are we in? Are we where we should be?
No. It's embarrassing. You can travel to Europe, you can travel to Asia, and relatively infrequently do you encounter hostility from people in other countries if you're visiting there. But everybody thinks we're nuts. And that's a real problem.
Wow.
I mean, not to put too fine a touch on it. It's just the way it is. I mean, people don't understand. Trust is a big deal in the world. Trust is a big deal. It's one of those other things that you cannot teach. Either somebody's trustworthy or they're not. And right now, the United States is not trustworthy in terms of what's going on in the world. The amount of gore that is going on in legislatures, in administrative proceedings, in businesses, it's just amazing. You can talk about Eastman Kodak being in financial trouble. Eastman Kodak, come on. Boeing. How could something be? How could a company like Boeing, and that's a heck of a company. How could they run into difficulties? Well, sure, it can happen to anybody, and you really have to try to avoid the downsides as well as take advantage of the upsides. But care and attention to detail are really important, and so is that magic world of culture. As you might expect, as somebody who likes to pay attention to how people interact with one another and what's important or not important, I think that culture, whether you're talking about a school or a business or a country, culture is important. We can all improve the cultures that we live and thrive in if we pay attention to making that an important priority.
All of those are qualities that come in handy when you're involved in government. The seasoned professionals, and they come alive with SALT and in the book Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. But we've gone through a period of 2 years where, if you're like a lifelong diplomat, we want to get rid of you. It's like you're stealing money from the government. You're not coming into work 5 days a week, and we're going to end that. And I'm going to put my own people in there to run that. When you see that, what are your thoughts? I mean, you've worked with seasoned diplomats that have been there, have the background, have the experience, and probably are not working from a partisan standpoint, but working from the benefit of the country. What's your thought when you see now in the esteem, lack of esteem that we have for seasoned professionals in the government?
I think that's one of the great travesties of, that you can identify in terms of what's going on these days in the United States. It's probably the same outside the U.S., although I haven't studied this aspect of as much as I have other things. But I have worked in the course of my career with lots of people who have international tied to their background in one way or another. And for example, when I was practicing law, I represented a number of government contractors. And we used to not be big fans of the people inside the government, the inspector generals that President Trump had by and large gotten rid of,
Yes.
because they were the enforcers of the rules and regulations. Well, those inspectors general were smart people. And they weren't out to ruin the world. They were out to try to ensure the rules are observed by government contractors. And you have to have a lot of respect for people who take a career and move into making things better because they're causing people to have to perform in accordance with the rules of the game. And if you can't understand the rules of the game and you try to spend your time on how to avoid them, I mean, I guess that's what some books talk about in terms of President Trump, for example. But what I've learned is that you cannot overestimate how valuable experience is. And I'll give you another example. We have cut down and cut back on the number of people that we have working for the government who deal with things like nuclear disarmament or nuclear cleanup.
Yes.
And I was on the board of a joint venture that was responsible for cleaning up massive amounts of nuclear waste. That was generated during after the Second World War, during the Cold War, and when we were putting up missiles all the time. But we're not generating as much anymore. We're still generating plenty, but it's a tremendous amount of dangerous stuff out there in the water and the ground, and you just have to absolutely. Feel very good about those people, but now we're firing them. How can you fire some of your best You could talk about the FDA. You could talk about any number of different organizations that perform vital functions that have to do with your well-being, my well-being, and somebody's well-being over in Bratislava. And so it's we have to remember that the people who work for the government are not all committing fraud, waste, and abuse just for the heck of it. What they're doing is trying to make things better in an area where there is lots of danger, lots of difficulty, and the need for judgment and experience are ultimate.
When you fire somebody and 2 weeks later it's a whoops, you realize I shouldn't have fired that person and have to call them back. I think that leads to maybe you were a little hasty in firing in the first place, but that's just a personal observation. James Maiwurm is our guest on the program. I don't know where the time has gone. I mentioned 4 hours. I'm not going to be off much by that. We just keep talking here. A couple minutes left in the program. Something that SALT deals with, and many of us do at some point in our lives, is searching for that relevance in later life. I say you certainly have achieved that. What's it like at this point when you've got free time, you're not working for somebody, you're doing this for yourself? How satisfying is it to be able to write a book like this book, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction, and continue to be a contributing member of society?
Well, it's a, to be candid with you, it's sort of a dream. I mean, if you
Yes.
can be as lucky as I've been. I'm a lucky man for my entire life, and I've been lucky in the sense now where I've been able to write a book that has actually changed some minds and caused people to think about things that they might otherwise not think about. And isn't that really what the goal was? Was just to get people to think about
Yes.
these issues? This is not a 10 the 10 rules of how you're going to fix things. It's the 10 rules you need to think about as you're trying to understand what needs to be done and how you can contribute to the fix. And I've gotten some very interesting letters from people who testify in the form of a letter that the book has changed their way of thinking, or that they thought it was an interesting read and a valuable read and worth his or her time. And if I only had 5 or 10 of those, I would probably define that as success. Maybe we've done a little bit better than that, but the success is not does not belong to the writer. It belongs to the reader, and what we want to do is reach the reader in ways that enable that reader to make a difference, because that's how you multiply the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And you do that with an art form. You do that with your writing, entertainment. People are reading an excellent story, and suddenly the message starts to resonate with them, and they have a different lookout, maybe outlook after they finished reading the book. Just a minute or so left here. Amazing success with this book, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. What's next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on getting this book sold.
Okay.
That's sort of job one right now. And I'm trying to decide what is that, what comes after that. One of the problems of starting out with some degree of success is it's a hard burden to overcome.
Yes.
And so we'll figure that out. But I would say stay tuned, but don't buy an option on the book yet.
Is this book available in foreign countries? Is this available in different languages? I say that because
Yeah,
of the.
we've got it to a minor extent. Our international distribution is not what it should be. We're working on that, but it's been printed in Mandarin, Portuguese, Spanish, and English, American English, and so we've got some international exposure that way. And then you'd be surprised at how many people who are not Americans who can dig into the book. For example, somebody in China doesn't have much learning to do from this book, but there's probably more books read in the Mandarin version than there are in where you would expect them to be. So I don't think the international exposure is overwhelming yet, but it's growing, because everybody, going back to one of the premises that we talked about early on, if you're in this together, and we are
Yes.
all in this together, whether we like it or not. Having a common set of principles to guide one's conduct, thinking, and growth is not a bad thing.
The book is so well written, obviously, winner of a number of awards, Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction. James Maiwurm has been our guest back on the program. That's M-A-I-W-U-R-M. His website is maiwurmpubs.com. That link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Links there for the book available, of course, wherever books are sold. And my thanks to prime7media.com for arranging this conversation with James today, where they will achieve your publishing and marketing goals, helping authors find the way towards a better and more successful publishing journey. We thank them for arranging our conversation. James, it is always a pleasure. Hopefully we can do this again and again and again. Thank you for joining us on the program. It is always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Indeed. Always a pleasure on my end, Rick. Anytime.
And I'm glad when I asked what you're doing next, you didn't say going to buy a fishing boat, because we need you to continue writing so we learn something.
I've had a fishing boat, Rick. I've been there, done that, and I learned a lot of lessons there, too.
Well, maybe that's a chapter in the next boat. Salt decides while he's retired to buy a fishing boat. I can see that in the follow-up book. The book is Inheritance of Crises and Dysfunction, James Maiwurm. If you're Googling, M-A-I-W-U-R-M, you're listening to This Week in America, and we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.